Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to Yes But Why episode 313, my conversation with stand-up comedian Zach Lyman. But first, let's talk about our sponsors. Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. If you sign up today, you can get a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Audible is an app I'm sure you've heard about where you can get access to hundreds of books and podcasts. I have gotten so behind with my listening of books, you guys. I have just been work, and haven't done anything for me, and I cannot wait to get on into it. I was just thinking today about how much I enjoyed the last book that I listened to on there, so guys, join me in getting back into it and go to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Sign up, get your account today, and tell me what you're reading because I need some support, you guys. Help me out. Yes But Why is also brought to you by PodcastCadet.com. PodcastCadet.com is the company that my husband Chris and I run to help podcasters. Chris and I run lots of companies, and in this one, if you need any help as a podcaster, you pretty much just get in touch with us and we help you. That's pretty much how it works. Go to PodcastCadet.com and you'll see lots of different tips and videos, things that are available there. And if you need help with your studio or editing or just coming up with an idea or a schedule, give us a call and we can help you with your podcast. If it turns out that whatever it is that you need costs money, well, if you mention code YBY20, you'll get 20% off that service. So let us help you. We're podcasters and we just want to help other podcasters. PodcastCadet.com. This week on Yes But Why, I chatted with Arizona-based stand-up comic Zach Lyman. Listen in as he tells me about growing up in a small town, making TikToks as Thrifting with Zach, and filming his soon-to-be streaming comedy special, The Big Laugh. I now present to you Yes But Why episode 313. Comedian Zach Lyman talks about little projects and The Big Laugh. Enjoy. I'm Amy Jordan, and this is
Yes But Why.
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 This is the Yes But Why podcast.
When I was very little, I was in South Dakota, and so everything's outside. Everything's like you're playing on top of hay bales. You're like playing in cornfields. I recently been talking about on stage about one of my earliest memories is like falling out of the back of a truck onto corn. So a lot of stuff like that. That's how you're playing with your friends. A lot of biking until the sun goes down. That type of, those are my like classic memories.
Wow, bike until the sun goes down. You seem a little young for that sort of scenario. They say that was a Gen X thing, that our parents were like, leave the house and don't come back. You had sort of a rural upbringing where your parents were like, it's safe, it's fine, good.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the town had 300 people, so it's like, we know them all, you're fine, you know, like go out there, be a kid. Like,
man, so. I don't know. That's like a solid argument for towns that have 300 people in them. Like, that sounds good. That being said, I think I know 300 people right now in Austin, and I wouldn't want them to be the only people I knew.
Right. Which is, I think, a very fair thing of like why you would leave. It's because it's like there's that part of, you know, that sense of community, everything's good, but then also like you do know the same 300 people for a very long time.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like, yeah, maybe get out, adventure and stuff. So, I mean, that's like when I was really little, that's how we played, that's how things were. And then big culture shock moving to Phoenix at like the age of 10-ish. And then it's like big city and you're like, whoa, I shouldn't even leave the house. this is very dangerous.
Oh, wow. You were talking about this and I was thinking from your like parents' point of view, like maybe they lived in a big city and then moved to the South Dakota town to be like, oh, relaxing. This is so much better. Mm. But then when you said that you, I imagined in my head that they were still in South Dakota, but now no, they moved you guys to Phoenix. So they were, you know, seeking something themselves. They're like, yeah, this was good. I feel like we had a good run. Solid. How many years before you were born were they in that town?
See, my parents moved around a little bit, but they're both from different small towns. So like my mom, very small town on a farm, very much grew up on a ranch in Colorado, like very, very poor, like extremely poor. And then my dad also grew up pretty poor in a small town in South Dakota. They both met in Colorado and then they moved. I don't know what made them move from Colorado to South Dakota, but then that kind of was like the move of like, they went to South Dakota, had my sister around that time too. And then, you know, we lived there for a while and then we came to Phoenix just to visit family. And, you know, it's nice, 80 degrees, palm trees, you go into all the fancy restaurants, very easy to be like, yeah, we need to be here. Like, I knew why we moved here for sure to Phoenix, knew that, but like why they decided to move back to move to South Dakota together. I'm not quite sure.
Well, you know, I mean, if he was from there, that could have been where he was comfortable, right? Usually just like when there's two people in two separate places, one of them is like, hey, mine's real good. And you're like, all right, sure, I'm cool. Let's do it.
Yeah.
You know, maybe she was like, you know what? I'd love to live with you, but here's the thing. Colorado, I'm done. Like, who knows, you know? It's it is fascinating, that small town to big city thing. How did the culture shock affect you as far as your, like, you know, way you looked at the world? You're talking about how you were guess I shouldn't get out of the house. So
everything, you know, like we lived in a fine, like I would say, like, I mean, there's rougher parts of Phoenix and we lived in an okay part, but like literally, not that it happened all the time, but like there was like a stabbing like almost right away in our apartment complex, and like, and everyone was like, oh, okay, this was definitely interesting. And then I found out that I had an accent. I didn't know I had one. That was a interesting, found out education's way different. It was like everything was just like, you're doing school wrong, you talk weird. And then also around that time I got diagnosed with ADHD, but then they called it just ADD for me. And just for me, they shortened it for me.
Keep it simple.
Yeah. So just a lot of like change happened immediately when we moved here. Big, like really like expanded my brain in a lot of ways. So
Now, were you always doing creative things when you were in South Dakota, or was it the big city, bright lights, big city, big school, theater teacher at potentially an elementary school that got you involved in the performing arts?
I was always kind of like quiet, introverted, by myself. And then like, you know, you're a farm kid, so you're like doing that life anyway. Like, you know, there's not a lot of people around anyway, so they're like, that's just life. And then I moved to Arizona, and I guess the creative thing I was doing was I got really into computers. And my dad was like teaching at a college. He was teaching like different computer classes. And so I really got into like, I was like, I think I built my first computer around the age 9. And then I was just heavily into computers. So my creative thing was like, after I was just like looking at parts and reading different books and like really going down that path. and not really doing anything that involved other people. Just very much introverted tinkering. And then
they were like, hey, Zach, you have to get out of the house. We've lived in Phoenix for 8 years now. You're graduating high school. Could you speak to another human? And you're like, listen, I made 17 computers. I don't need people.
Yeah, I built my friends. So like that was like when I was young. And then like in high school is when I started like hanging out with people that were more extroverted and like, and then they were like, let's make sketches and let's be out where, you know, they're like, but at the entire time from literally like as little as I can remember of like, my dad loved Steve Martin. My dad was like doing very creative things. You know, my dad was a clown when I was a child. So like, there was like always like that in the background, but in my life, that was just like normal. I wasn't really taking it in as like this cool creative thing. I was like, yeah, my dad's a clown and now he teaches college classes. So what? That's it doesn't
matter. Just what dads do, you know, first they start as a clown and then they become a university professor. It's a classic path.
Yeah. We all know the story.
Ages, story as old as time.
So, of course, like there's always stand up in the house and there's always some kind of comedy in the house. But like not where I'm not like talking to friends about it or like I'm not at school being like, you guys watch that Steve Martin? He's wild and crazy, isn't he? You know, like I wasn't.
You joke, but I definitely did that. Like I was definitely like every week. And on Mondays, I'd go in and be like, who saw Saturday Night Live? Let's talk about it. And like, then we would analyze it, you know, usually me just talking and they would listen. But, you know.
Yeah, that wasn't happening for me. I was very much like keeping it inward. And then in high school, people were like, I like comedy. And I was like, oh, OK. Yeah, here's the story. Here's a thing I know, you know. So, yeah.
Oh man, once you made friends with those extroverted people who wanted to do sketches, were you like, by the way, I know everything about Steve Martin? And they're like, oh, impressive. Did it like ever get you any brownie points?
It was kind of like when they were like talking about, you know, we're kids and then you're like talking about doing sketches. And then I'm like, I wrote this whole script out and they're like, wow, there's like jokes in there and stuff. You know, like they're like, man, that's actually, wow, okay.
So you're a writer too then. You've been writing this whole time. You're building computers and then like you once you turn it on, you're like, let me write a quick novel. Like, is that...
Yeah, I was always like into writing for sure, so...
What kind of stuff were you writing?
At that age, probably a lot of like sad poetry. Probably like a lot of...
Sure, same.
You know... What now, like, man, if I had a blog back then, man, just be a sad blog.
Right? Poor kids that are on the internet right now. I am so glad that many years of my life are just lost to the ether. Like, you won't ever know. Yeah. Oh, yeah, good luck finding my MySpace profile. Okay, no.
I was just going to say, mine's just like in like someone's AIM account receiving messages of blog posts. I'm sending it to my friends on AIM.
Oh, my God. I love it. Oh, man. Or like when everybody had like a Blogspot account for a little while. Like that was or LiveJournal.
Yeah.
Classic.
I don't know if I ever had one of those, but I had like, am I wrong? Or did AIM have like a bio that like you could use?
I'm sure that there was one on there. So you were like, who am I talking to? Because it was like one of the first moments where you're just talking to strangers. Like when you could first start talking to people on the internet, it was a lot of like, let's just see who's going to respond. And it was like a lot of random.
Yeah, I guess more precise. Yeah, it was like more like I'm trying to talk to just this person.
Yeah, you're looking for like a username with like stuff. Yeah, as opposed to before where it was like I'm gonna type into this group and see who responds to it.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember. I think I updated the bio a lot, but I don't know. I don't think I ever.
still out there somewhere. The internet never dies. Yeah. So, yeah, you know.
That's cringy.
Just wait till it's 100 years old or something. And then they go back to build history with it. And they're like, oh, quickly erase this. This is not good.
Yeah, oh, no.
delete. Oh, man. So at this point, you're just starting to get some pals who are noticing your creative side. Hey, here's a script. Whoa, there's jokes. I can't believe it. Mm-hmm. Did you ever do any sort of organized theater or performance in high school, or did it come out in college?
I did actually in eighth grade. I had a teacher that wanted to do improv at school as a class. And I never really tell people this because when you say people, I've taken an improv class, that means that there was some kind of teaching that happened.
Sure.
And it was more of my teacher at that time saw Whose Line Is It Anyways and was like, let's just do that. With no, I'm not going to give you guidance or give you advice or anything. We'll just do that for a while. And we did that. And that was the first time that I was this is fun to be characters and stuff. And that kind of stuck with me a little bit. I remember doing that. But yeah, I never really did theater, never really did anything in high school. I wasn't really involved in high school very much. I actually ended up dropping out my junior year. So I have a GED. I don't even have a high school diploma. So
turns out it doesn't matter. Listen up, people who are listening. Doesn't actually matter at all.
Found out some of my friends and family, very concerned.
Sure.
Now it's I've had great jobs where they've never asked for any, they're not all right, bring in your diploma on Wednesday and we'll prove.
Yeah. I tried to tell one of my friend's kids the other day, I was like, P.S. No one ever looks at your SAT scores again. Ever. Never once. It comes up at a bar in your 30s. That's it.
And you can lie.
Yeah. And no one will check. Tell them you got whatever. Just know what the top is. Because if you go above it, they know you're lying. You can't be like, I got a 2000. I'm like, no. You did not.
If you told me that, though, special. I'd be like, that sounds great. I don't know.
I went to a college where there were a lot of people who didn't even get GEDs before they went to the college. Mm. It was kind of like a private school that was like, hey, if you can take, because there was a test you took, a placement test. So they were like, hey, if you take the placement test and you pass it, we don't care. And I found that out years later that there were a bunch of my college had a significant portion of homeschooled kids who just didn't have any level of organized anything, not even a GED or whatever. And they just passed the test and came to college. And I was like, oh, what was your life like? No, you didn't go to high school. Okay, cool. Yeah, sounds good. Great. Now, when you dropped out, did you drop out because you were a burgeoning computer engineer and you were like, I don't need this. I'm going to be creating the next Microsoft or.
No, I wasn't doing well in school, connecting well with it, where it was some stuff was really beneath me in certain ways. And then there was other things that I sucked at grasping the concept of, it was just I was all over the map where I'm in advanced classes over here. And then also classes, where they're here's a coloring book, that's I was in the, and so I left one school because I honestly was getting bullied a lot at one school, left that school, went to another school where they're like, okay, now it's more organized bullying. So
now the teachers are in on it. So it's the trouble.
Teachers will help out. Yeah. So it was just I was just having troubles at both the schools. So then I tried to go back to the first school. And then they were like, yeah, because of all this, these credits don't transfer. So you're actually even a year behind. And then that was just like enough for me to be like, I don't even care. Why do I do this? You know? And so I just dropped out and I didn't get my GED until I was like 25 ish. Sure. And, very similar of like what you're talking about with colleges. I was in college and I just knew that I needed my GED to get my bachelor's. And so,
oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know who's to say if that's true. I heard it from another person. So.
That's what the guidance counselor at the college said. I don't know.
Who knows? I don't trust those people. And then, so I got my GED. And then they used it as my placement test too. So it actually did test me out of some stuff as I was in college. And then, you know, fast forward a few more years and then I dropped out of college. So just keep up with the quitting part that I'm going to.
Sure. Well, you know, yeah. The trouble is with a lot of these things that we're talking about is that, you know, there's a lot that's unusual in the institutional world. There's a lot that especially people who have like a creative brain or a different way of looking at the world, you know, it's hard to fit in to that kind of scene. And they want you to be fit into this, you know, peg and be like, there you are. Yeah, this is where you're supposed to be. You get it now, right? And you're like, I guess. I guess so. Like, and you know, it's really not for everybody. I was talking to somebody the other day where I was like, I'm glad that we're moving into a generation where I feel like they probably won't pressure every kid to go to college the way they used to. Like, it used to be like, that's the only thing. And I was like, but is it the only thing? Because I'm pretty sure there's like a million things and you could do whatever you wanted. And there really is no one path. And I think that that's, everyone thinks that there's the right way to do something. And I think that that's hooey. I think somebody came up with that. And that person is like, you know, sad and wishes they did something else. You know, like... It's hard. And a lot of these big schools too, like it's hard to do. Now you went from small town to medium sized city where how many people were in your high school? Like if you were to graduate your high school class, like hundreds or?
Oh, in Arizona? Yeah. Huge. Yeah. I mean, maybe thousands. Yeah. It's like the first high school that I went to and then I went back to, a massive high school. So like, it's like a college campus level of like big.
Yeah. So. Now, what about the college that you went to? Did you go back to the small school or did you stick with the large crowds?
I went to, from my understanding, I think it's a bigger campus. I went to Glendale Community College here. And it's like, it's a good size. I mean, you definitely, you know, you got a longboard from one side to the other, you know, it takes some time. Yeah. So, I think it's a good size. And I did that for a while, but then I mostly did that online too. So, yeah.
It's interesting that was even an option.
Yeah.
Huh. Wild.
Just getting in early. Yeah.
Yeah, man. You're like, oh, you kids are in online school. Yeah, I've done that. It's fine. Yeah. I know how to do it.
I used it.
You guys have problems? Well, the internet didn't even work that well when I was there.
Yeah. Yeah, you know.
No, I just wondered because we were talking earlier about like the small town to big city thing. And I wondered if you were, you know, like done with the big crowds and trying to find something smaller, or are you now in, what's your like circle like now? Is it like small group, stick with the same crowd, or are you like big city going to a bunch of different things? Like what's the vibe for you now as far as like, you know, big crowds, small crowds?
Yeah, my girlfriend and I talk about this often because I'm very true to that, where it's like I have a couple of friends in my life that have been close friends since like one is like I've known since fifth grade and we became good friends in high school and stuff. And now we're like really close. And then another friend that I met towards the end of my high school career, and we're very close. And then, like, you know, and then the rest of my friends are stand-up comedians that I've either known for 6 years or whatever. But like, it's definitely like I have like 8 close friends, and that's like it. And I'm very like settled in with my group, and like, yeah, I'm out there, I'm meeting people and stuff like that. But like, I'm still hanging out with those like 8 close friends, you know, from time to time. You know, and some of them don't even live here anymore. So, I'm definitely that way. I'm like, the more every year I notice more how introverted I am, and how I like make certain things, choices from an introverted standpoint.
Fascinating. Yeah. I wondered if perhaps your childhood in the small town made you sort of, especially once you then spent all this time in the big city with big schools and stuff, like, oh, how can I handle this? Like, and then now you've got sort of a tight-knit community. Even I'm sure the stand-up community isn't so huge that it's like, oh, I'll never meet all the people, or like, you couldn't fit us all in a stadium. Like, you probably can. Like, you know what I mean? Whereas your high school sounds like insane. I had small schools all the way up. Right. In my college, I was a theater major. There were 6 of us in the theater department in my thing. So it was like, I was talking about college to somebody and they were like, oh, are you talking about high school? And I was like, no, I'm talking about college. And they're like, what? That's what your life was like? And I was like, yeah, I didn't know. I just went to, I picked a college and I went. I thought that's what college was like. Like, you know, but I came from Boston, and now I live, and after college, I went straight to New York City. So it was like, I had that tiny group. And then I was like, how would I feel about millions of people living right next to me? Oh, let's try it. Like, you know, there is something to the ebb and flow of it. Like, who knows? You right now you have a tight knit group, you know, you're staying in your area, you're going to the same places, get your schedule and your work. But, you know, in a few years you could be like, I gotta get out of here. I gotta move to the biggest city. What's the biggest city in the world? What's that? I'm gonna move to Mumbai. Let's do it. Like, I need to see people. Like, you know, I feel like it's wherever we're at in our own little journeys, however we want to interact with people and connect with them.
Yeah, I'm definitely very good at like being like, here's all this busyness, and then I'm like over here doing my own thing. Like, all of my comedy career has been that way. Most of my life has been that way, you know? So it's like, even if like later this year, I am going to move to New York. And, you know, that's, you know, but like at the same time, I'm not worried about that part because I am such a, this is what I do. This is how I do my thing, you know? And like, as a comic, I like book my own tours. I like, I'm my own manager in a lot of ways. So it's like, you know, I have who I want on my tour, or maybe I do it by myself, you know? And it's very much like, that's just how I am. And that's how I've always done things. So I'm not always good at like being like the community leader, or like being like, yeah, let's all have a big community and hang out together. You know, like, so.
Well, I feel like it sort of harkens back to what we were talking about when I was talking about with the institution idea, which is like, you know, if the like big crowd joiner situations aren't for you, they're never going to be for you, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. You go your own way, you have your own adventure, you take care of things in your own way, and you don't have to worry about doing it the way they say you should do it. Right. So it's all good.
Yeah.
So my question here, and we've talked a lot, I feel like I'm getting to know you, but in the story, you are pretty introverted. You got like a tight-knit group. You're not talking a lot. You're real quiet. And yet, one major detail is that you are a stand-up comedian, and not just a stand-up comedian. You also do podcasts. So there's a lot of creative output you're doing right now. How did you get there? How did you even like go, yes, I would like to stand on a stage with a microphone? Like, what? Who convinced you?
I was working at a coffee shop. I was like 18, something like that. And the owner was like, hey, we're going to have like a variety hour open mic type of thing. I already booked a guy that's going to breathe fire. And I also know this guy that plays a lot of weird instruments. I need you to go, to write like 10 minutes of jokes and then just bring them up. And I was like, okay, you know, and like at that time I was like, you know, I've already done a little bit of sketch, you know, and like my friends are more of like pushing me to be outward at that point. So this is the first time that I would be pushing myself outwardly to do it. So I, that Tuesday came around and none of those people showed up that he booked. So then we had a crowd and then he was like, just go out there and be funny. So I like improvised and stretched like probably five minutes of jokes until way too long, like way too long, like just like being goofy and act outs and whatever. And then we just had every Tuesday and then more and more like musicians started showing up and stuff like that. But I was hosting every week doing 5 to 10 minutes at the top and then bringing people up and dealing with a lot of crazy people at that open mic. And so like I went from doing no stand up to doing it every week, every Tuesday for a fact. And then also a couple of my friends and I were like, well, we could book other coffee shops. So I'm like 18, 19 and my friend's like going around and trying to get us shows and he's like booking shows for us. And then I'm just doing my 10 minutes at these different coffee shops for a while. So for the first 6 months, I remember doing a lot of stand up and then like once I stopped hosting and stuff like that, it kind of fizzled for that the rest of that year. But the first 6 months was like a bunch of stuff.
I can't believe you said yes and that you didn't just cancel the show when the two acts didn't show up. Like,
yeah.
Wow. That, I mean, how did you even like will yourself to do that? Like, I would have been like, we're just cancel the show. Just like, it's like over. They're not here, you know?
Yeah.
How did you convince yourself to do it?
I don't know. I probably didn't think about it that much. I probably was just like, I guess this is what I have to do now. And then started. And I think there was like, if I'm really thinking back, I think there was like, let's start now. I'll stretch for a while. And then when someone shows up, they can do a thing. And then people just didn't show up. So.
Oh my God, man. Those fire breathers, real, real unreliable
people.
They just don't want to come inside to a coffee shop and do it. I was surprised that he would have booked such a thing because, I mean, don't get me wrong, I've definitely seen fire breathers. I've booked fire breathers for variety shows inside bars, but it was a high-ceilinged place. Like, I can't imagine like some small coffee shop and being like, don't worry, it's just fire. Like,
It was in the backyard.
Oh, and, way better, way better.
Yeah.
I was very concerned for the fire safety.
Yeah, it was a pretty good sized backyard. And the owner of the coffee shop, I still talk to him to this day. But man, he's a cool guy and he was like in bands and stuff like that. And he wasn't really into coffee. He was more of just like, I want a place where I can book shows. So he had like some stuff for booking shows. And then like after that, my job there became more of like a booker, less of a barista, where like, I just need your help to organize Saturdays and Sunday shows and then also run the Tuesday open mic, you know?
Wow. So you like really just got into it. Like he brought you on and now you're producing things. Like you got right into the organizational part of it all. Like that makes so much more sense now when you say that you're like setting up your own tours and whatnot. Like, because organization was the first part that you got into. Well, number one, write a bunch of jokes and then make them last way longer than they need to. And then organize a bunch of stuff. Like, oh, man.
Well, my friends were in bands. And then I was meeting these bands and stuff like that from the open mic and stuff. And so, like, yeah, as like, I'm a young comic. I'm not old enough to get into the comedy clubs. I'm not old enough to be around other comics. So, like, for the first many years, like 3 years of doing comedy, I'm like getting advice from people that aren't in comedy at all. And so I'm like watching how bands book stuff. And then I'm like, yeah, I could do a punk music venue. Like, yeah, why not? You know? So like, and like to this day, it's still like things that I like, all like, if I'm talking to other comics, I'm like, yeah, I mean, this is how I do it, but I maybe this isn't right. But like, here's how I've been doing it for way too long. And, you know, and, but yeah, like that, exactly. Like my people I'm hanging around are not comics.
Does it occur to you that you have to have so much confidence for you to, like, because you're talking about just making choices, going your own way, doing things the way you think, but like so many people insist upon someone telling them what to do. How did you become so like confident and self-assured that you were just like, yeah, I'm going to do what I think is right? I mean, I know adults that are like in their 50s that don't do stuff without you telling them what to do. Like, how did you get there? Like mentally?
I think it's also, that's a very kind thing for you to say that I have confidence. And also, but I think a lot of that, I thought about that a lot in my late 20s, because I started recognizing that some people do need just the approval, like be told that it's okay to do that thing. And I was like, I don't know, well, you know, just do it. But I think that's just like, I kind of like raised myself, you know, I was very like a latchkey kid of just like, yeah, I mean, you know, if you want food, you're going to make food. You want like, when I wanted a computer as a kid, my dad told me, he's like, well, you gotta build it. If you want a computer, you gotta build it. So it was like, that's just kind of how my whole life was before that. Like if I wanted to do something, I had to do it. Or, you know, and like same with like high school, of like recognizing that I wasn't a good fit. And then I was like, I decided that I wasn't a good fit. And then I told my parents that I'm dropping out. It wasn't like a discussion. It was just like, yeah. And I've talked to my parents about this later in life, and they were like, yeah, I don't know, you just kind of did your own thing. Like they're like, you know, sometimes they're like, we don't know what to, we're busy working, you know, we're trying to like make a living, you kind of just did your thing, and we just were like, yeah, he seems like he's got it figured out. So I think sometimes it just kind of led back to that.
Yeah, I just wonder if it's like just naturally who you are, you know, that you're, that the idea where it's like, yeah, I'm just gonna do what I think is right. There, you know, cause yeah, you're right. There's so many people that like require approval and like need you to tell them. In fact, as we were talking earlier about why I do the podcast, a lot of people need to be told that it's okay that they can be creative. And, and so like, I love that you stumbled into it with this coffee shop owner guy who was like, hey, what are you doing on Tuesday? By the way, you're the host of the open mic. And you're like, wait, what? Like, yes, that's what's happening now. But, you know, you don't, as a coffee shop owner, you don't choose the, you know, person who you don't think is the right barista to be the host of the open mic. So, you know, it really just must be who you are, like sort of innate in you, that you have this, like, I can do it. Sort of a capableness. I think that about my own child. He's 4, right? But I'm like, if I know anything about my kid, it's that he's capable. Like, he can do it. And whatever happens, he'll be able to do it. Because he just kind of takes care of himself in little ways where I just watch him do it. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Great. And I think that's kind of like just who we are. You know, we have our own, it's part of our personalities. It's a fascinating contrast in your story between this idea of yourself as an introvert, and then really you make all these decisions about your life that are so like present to your own life experience and like honor what you're feeling, when so many people just look like, mom, dad, or society, what should I do? And you're like, so what I'm going to do is this, and hope it works out. Hope you guys like it. If you don't, I'm probably going to keep doing it. And yeah, I don't know. There's something really fascinating about that vibe. And I like how you're like, I'm not confident. Yeah, you are. You are, though, because you do a lot of stuff that people aren't confident doing. I mean, even just being alone on a stage ever, it requires a lot of, gumption, a lot of like belief in yourself that you have something to say.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just funny to think of that because like, yeah, I don't get anxiety or real anxious or anything about like going on stage, but like I'll have one-on-one conversations after the show with some like a stranger even. And then I get in the car and I'm like, man, I said some stupid things. Why'd I say, I get real, like, you know, so much social anxiety or like, you know, just like so anxious. And I'm definitely an anxious person, definitely in general. But it's funny because like, you're right. Like I don't get anxious about what people normally get anxious about, like stage fright or, you know, or like making big life bold choices. But I'm like, man, if I mess up this order at McDonald's, it's going to be the death of me. Like that's like, I'm freaking out about that stuff. Like, I'm like, how can I be a normal person? You know, that's,
I feel you. I feel like kindred to this idea because individually, yeah, I have some anxiety about like interacting with people. I walk away and I'm always like, they think I'm so dumb. But like, in a group, the larger a crowd that's in front of me that I can talk to all at once, it feels so much safer.
Yeah.
It feels like, hey guys, I'm going to talk to you all. I know there's 600 of you, so let's have a chat. An intimate chat, just you and me. Yeah.
Yeah. I've spent years preparing what I'm going to say on that stage. You know what I mean? And like, I've written it, I've performed it, I've polished it. These are my thoughts. I've listened back to the recordings. You know, like, I know what I'm doing on comedy. But then, yeah, you catch me and you hit me with like a question that I wasn't prepared about, where you like come up to me after a show and you're like, well, what was it like in the third grade? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, you know, and then I walk away being like, man, I shouldn't have told the crazy story about the third grade. You know, like, I just like, that's like what I panic about.
You get like a lot of material the next week about your third grade. And you're like, where's that guy? He wanted to know. I wrote it for you, man.
Listen, I'm following up on that conversation we had. And I have notes.
I love the idea that like a stand-up set could just be like a direct conversation to one person in the room. Like, it's like, ladies and gentlemen, come to the stage, Zach Lyman. Like, oh, and you're like, hey guys, listen, I just want to say to Tina, yes, it was your hair that we were laughing at the other day, because it's like, what? And then she's like, don't. And you're like, it was because it was pointed up and you didn't know. And we thought, you know, it's like, no, don't do this. What are you doing? Also, when you asked about cream cheese, I was unprepared for that question.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of research now on cream cheese. I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're talking about working on your comedy and listening to stuff, like listening back to what you're doing and doing the work. Tell me about your process. It sounds like you like really put the effort in. Oh, you laughing at me, but I'm impressed. I know hundreds, thousands of stand-ups who don't listen to themselves, who just go like, what? I wrote some funny jokes. You like it? Like you care. Yeah. You're putting effort in. You're like editing.
Yeah, I try. I don't want to. Okay, here's what I do. I write my set, right? I prepare my set. Here's the five topics. Let's say it's an open mic. Here's the few topics I'm going to fit into this 5 to 7 minutes, you know? And then I write that set in my notebook. Then I draw a line and then I write the word notes. And then I leave the second half of it for notes. And one thing that I do is that I have that page open while I'm waiting to go up, right? And this is a more recent thing I started doing, and I think it's so helpful, is that I'll write down something like, the room is cold. Like, it's literally cold in here. Or the comic before me said some racist stuff and they had a boom off stage. I write those notes down, right? So that way later when I'm listening to the recording and I'm like, why do I sound so stiff? Or why do I sound cautious? Like, why does the crowd sound cold? You know, like, why are these things happening? And instead of me going, oh, it must have been me, it's my energy or my joke, or, you know, blaming myself, I can be like, no, listen, yeah, some things happened before you went up, things were happening during you went up, you know. And so I make those notes, and then when I'm listening back, I'll make notes of like, oh, I could cut out words here. That joke went well. That joke didn't go so well. Oh, I think that has something to it, you know, and maybe I'm talking about those few things. And then maybe I write down some tags I thought of, or like, I liked how I word it. Because when I actually write the joke, like, especially when it's a new idea at an open mic, I may only have 30, 40, 50% of the idea. And so I'm like, okay, I mean, this is my idea of how I'm probably going to get into it. And then this is like, for sure, the punchline, I think. And maybe here's a tag for it. So I'll go up there and then I'll do that. And then, like, you know, how I get from beginning to end might be different, or I might throw something else in, or immediately think of like a joke that I could put in there that fits, right? So there's all those things that could be happening on stage. And then when I go back and listen, I go, ah, you talked too much in the beginning. You got to find a better way to get into that. Get to the point, Zach, you know, like things like that. I can kind of like really dissect. So then when I hit the next open mic, I can be more precise. And then I'm just like narrowing it down to make the joke tighter and tighter until I'm like, oh, this is like something. And then I can do the reverse where I just start adding tags and adding things and kind of doing that. But that's like my process overall, how I view it. So
it's a great process. That's I appreciate you sharing that, and that like you put so much effort in, you know, like you're really paying attention and like trying to develop it and crafting it out. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of hardworking comics out there, but very unfortunately, I tend to hear a lot of not so organized, you know, working on jokes over and over kind of people. And I, not on this podcast necessarily, just sort of in the world, but like, but just like the idea that you put that effort in is so, it's worth it. You know, and I believe it probably leads to it. You mentioned you went on tours, which tells me that you probably have quite a bit of material you could do, and material you could adjust for locations. So if you're traveling around and you're like, yeah, this one's not going to fly in this town, and you can change it up with something else, like, how did you get to creating tours and how does that work for you? I don't even know if you've been on a tour recently because of the world, but like, how has it been?
So two things I'll mention right away is I probably work so hard on my jokes because I, not that I really believe the idea that anyone's naturally funny or anyone's naturally, you know, like sure, there's maybe some personalities that fit better or whatever, but like, you know, you're like, oh, that person's so good at impressions. And then you find out they've been doing impressions since they were five. And then you're like, okay, they've had 40 years to get that impression down. Okay, cool. Yeah. You know, so like there's some of that happening, right? But I think I worked so hard on my stand-up because I was terrible for so long. You know, like I just wasn't good. There wasn't, like I said, the first handful of years I wasn't around other comics that could be like, hey man, that joke is not good, you know, or like, that's not a real punchline, or do you understand setups? You know, like there wasn't that happening. So I was really just kind of figuring it out and writing a lot to get to like something. And, so like it was always in me to be like, I just got to keep writing. And then I did see that for every 100 jokes I wrote, that's something I'd get like this little piece of something good, you know, and it gets easier every year. But I think that's why I work so hard on it. And then the kind of that that also tells you why I started doing tours and started booking a lot of my own stuff is I was too young to get into the clubs. So then you have to book your own stuff. Right. And then when I was finally old enough to get into clubs, there was, You can name X, Y, Z of why a club's not booking me. You know, like I'm not the right comic or material or person or height or I don't know, you know, like who some. I mean, I always tell the story of like, I know a booker that didn't book a comic for future gigs because at their tryout thing, they made a joke about dogs and they're like, we love dogs. And they're like, well, my joke was an anti-dog. And they're like, well, we just don't talk about dogs on stage. So like, you never really know why someone's not booking it, but I'm a young comic. People aren't booking me. And I quickly realized, and this is like MySpace days, you know, and I'm young and I quickly realized that if I got a crowd to come to my thing, that at some point in my career, no matter what, clubs are going to want you there because you have a following. And so I started kind of piecing that together pretty young. And then also people aren't booking me. So if I want to perform, I have to call a bar and say, hey, I want to perform. And, you know, and when you're young, you end up burning all those bridges because you do a terrible show or, you know, whatever it is, you know. But yeah, it was just that of like, I was just trying to reach out. And then to this day, like, you know, I would say, I don't know, like maybe 60, 70% of what I do is things that I still book myself. And the rest of it is when someone reaches out and says, we want you on this thing, or here's a corporate gig, or here's a whatever. But if I want to work every week, I have to make that happen. You know, like, no, not everyone's just going, man, I wish we could have Zach on this show, you know? So, and there's only so much for me to get onto. So, it's just kind of evolved into what I started doing, like, tours where I'll do longer and longer tours. And then, yeah, the pandemic happened at a perfect time for me, you know. I booked the largest tour I was ever going to go on, 3-month tour. And then the pandemic happened 2 months before I was supposed to leave on that tour. And so I spent a whole year booking that tour. I spent all of 2019 booking that tour for 2020, and then I had to cancel all of it. And yeah, I haven't been really on the road since. And now, as of recently, I started looking into booking some stuff on the road and kind of getting, you know, things out there. And I have a couple dates that are looking pretty promising in June. But yeah, like that's kind of like why and how I got to that.
Yeah. Man, what an impressive thing that you like booked that humongous tour. Like, even though it didn't happen, like the act of booking it, the act of finding the places, of finding places you could go, convincing them to put you on, like that's the work. Like, once you went on the tour, that was the reward. And I'm sorry you didn't get it. But like, yeah. Sorry. But you know, like it's, the effort that you put in is so worth it. Like just to know that you could do it. I'm so impressed with you creating your own opportunities and like just making things happen for yourself. To harken back to what we were talking about before, so many people think they just sit there and wait and someone's going to walk in and be like, no, you need to be on SNL. And you're like, what? That's not going to happen. Like, do you know how many of those people, like the people who are actively on SNL right now, do you want to know how much effort they put into getting there? So much. Probably every one of them submitted packets. And if you don't know what that means, you're really far away from it. But they submitted packets multiple different times. Like the idea of the work and building yourself up and creating opportunities for yourself, it's the only way. It's the only way you're going to get anything. And especially in this day and age with there's like 4 million people with like YouTube channels and TikTok and like they've got followings on Instagram. Like there's a whole bunch of people that are just getting followings for like doing nothing. And and so if you're trying to do something, you have to create the opportunities for yourself. It's like such a smart way to get involved with things. And like, again, just like such a brave way to like get out there and be in the world. So many people, I'm sure, are like jealous and like, you're not doing it the right way. But it's only because they wish they had tours and they don't have the gumption to like call a place and be like, hey, in 6 weeks, can I come in there with three friends? Yeah. And they're like, yes. And that's how you do it. Like, it's not.
Yeah.
Oh man, it's just really amazing to see this. Like, you're creating opportunities for yourself. You're so pleasant about it not working. Like, I know that there's been time, you've healed. You know, it's been 2 years. You're over it now. But like, just the idea that you did all this work and then it didn't happen, and you're telling the story with this like pleasant tone, like, oh, he's not damaged. Like, great. Yeah, like, you'll be able to do it again, you know?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's 2 years of recovery for sure.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I get it. I understand. Yeah.
Yeah, there was a point where I was like, stand-up doesn't exist, okay? Let's not even talk about it. There was definitely that moment, especially when I was like, okay, this is it. I don't know, you know? But yeah, yeah, thank you for saying that. It's definitely, I've processed and moved on, and now I'm like finally like even thinking about doing it again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you, during the pandemic times, have you been performing on Zoom shows and, you know, getting involved in that way? Or are you using your writing abilities and ideas in your marketing job?
I one thing that happened, I did like maybe three Zoom shows. So I did one that was like a corporate gig, and I thought it went terrible. And then later they messaged me and they're like, that was amazing. And I was like, that's not how I felt. And then I did an open mic, and then I got booked on a thing. And I think that's literally the three that I did. I didn't enjoy it. It was like a taste of something that I, but not the whole, I was like, I don't like how this is like kind of stand up to me.
It was like sugar-free chocolate. You were like, why?
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, I don't drink diet soda, you know? Like,
yeah. So, no, thank
drink
you.
Drink the hard stuff.
That's right. So. Classic all the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Real American of me. And so I did that. But an interesting thing that happened was a friend of a friend, in a way, suggested me to TikTok. They were looking for creators to do their program called Learn on TikTok. And what they were trying to do was they were trying to, and I think they still are. I mean, I don't think that it's a program that's ended, but my time in it ended was they basically put me through a boot camp. They taught me how to use the app. And then they wanted me to teach comedy and podcasting on TikTok. And so I made videos teaching comedy in short form, like trying to, here's how to write a joke. And, you know, but like, you know, as you are when you start with something, mine were pretty rough because I've never used the app before. Like, if I was to do that now, yeah, it would be way better. Like, I'm way better at TikTok now. But like, I literally was learning the app, making these videos, and it was fun. It was cool, but it was like a fun like thing that kept me working. And I made a bunch of them. You know, and so I did the Learn on TikTok program. They sent me some cool stuff. They sent me a skateboard. They sent me my favorite sweater. They sent me a TikTok sweater that's insanely comfortable. I wear it all the time. And I kind of like, there's like that part too, where I'm like, now I'm wearing a TikTok sweater in public. And I'm like, it's just comfy. Okay. I'm not trying to like brag. I'm just trying to like wear a shirt, but it, you know,
yeah, you walk into every room and you're like, I worked at TikTok. That's why I'm wearing this sweatshirt. Look at it,
guys. Yeah, I did a thing.
I don't know if you're aware. Have you read my shirt? Because,
but it's insanely comfortable. And they sent me that. And yeah, I still make TikToks in a different type now. But yeah, that was like how I kind of kept busy, was doing the TikToks. I really leaned into the podcasting for a while. Mm-hmm. And then now I have a separate TikTok where I fix retro video game machines. and I do voiceovers, but like the voiceover is like, cause I watch a lot of those videos. And so those videos are very like technical and very like, this is exactly how much RAM and the CPU and the, you know, like they're like really getting, and mine's like, you know, like I'm like off the top of my head, I can think of like, there was like a camera I was fixing and there was like tons of gunk in it. And so I was shaking it and I was like, and then the guy started coughing up. Like I'm like pretending as if he's a person, you know? And so I like do the fun voiceover and that's gone really well and that's growing. So that's like, I started doing that and I started leaning into tinkering and really finding a hobby that way. And then I started making videos out of it and I'm still doing that to this day, but that's how I kept busy through all of that.
Wow. So sounds like from the videos of fixing the games that you've stuck with your love of computers and taking them apart and putting them back together, huh? Has that been a maintained thing throughout your life?
No, you just got back into it. Yeah, I got back into it. I fix my own stuff, like if my laptop breaks or whatever, but like not really like advertised or told anyone about that. Sure. Or like also, if you ask me like what the latest like CPU and RAM, so I'm like not up to date on stuff, right? Like I don't know the newest thing or whatever. But like from years of taking things apart, I was like, yeah, I could figure out how to fix a Nintendo Switch or something. So then, you know, I just started like buying stuff at Goodwill or finding things and fixing them. And so like, yeah, I didn't really do that until recently, started like really leaning into it. So.
Man, fascinating. Yeah. I appreciate that we had this long form conversation for me to connect those ideas, you know, that it's like a new thing for you right now, even though that's very classically you. Like you didn't even realize that you're just reigniting an old hobby as opposed to like, well, I guess I just figured this out. No, man, you've always been good at it. You just put it down. Now you picked it back up. Like, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's so many people in my life now that didn't know me as a kid. Right. So then they're like seeing these videos and they're like, how do you know how to do that? Like, they're like, did you like learn this? Like, where did you take a class? And,
yeah.
You know, yeah. It's funny.
They're like, was this one of the online courses you took during the pandemic? Yeah, and you're like, no, that was only French. But no, that's so cool. And I love that like you found a way to be like chosen by TikTok. I know you're like a friend set up, but let's be honest, they didn't just choose you. Your friend suggested you because you're cool. And then TikTok was like, yes, we'll do it. I'm sure if they were like, if they pointed them in my direction, they'd be like, oh no. No, no, that woman's still writing with a pen on a piece of paper. That's not, we can't have that. You know what I mean? So you're cool. You've got like these cool videos. You're like in TikTok at the very beginning. You're like on the edge of stuff. Like that's very impressive. I have 100% never been on TikTok. That's how old I am. That's what I'll be saying.
You would love it.
Sure.
I hear that.
Who knows? I've had lots of people tell me to get on it, and I'm like, yeah, maybe I will. No.
I was the same way. I was like, I've never even watched any of these. I was like, am I old for TikTok? Like, there was like all those thoughts when I was like joining. And now I'm like, I mean, you know, now I know tons of people that are way older than me that are way more successful. It's crazy to think that I would be old.
Yeah, well, it did seem like a teen thing for a while. You know what I mean? You know, it's almost like Snapchat was for a while, where you're like, oh, I'm not getting on that. People are going to think I'm trying to, like, interact with the kids. No, thank you. No. I don't want to know what those things mean. No, thanks. I'm good. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. No, but you're, like, connected to stuff. And they asked you to teach how to podcast. Tell me about the podcast. Tell me about, like, how you got into that. Did you start it during the pandemic as something to do? Were you already podcasting? Like, you're going up on stage. You're booking yourself on tours. You're probably also have a day job. And you're also podcasting. How are you doing this?
Yeah, not well. I've been podcasting since 2015. I think I have like, I'll say like, I don't know, to guess, I don't number mine. So I guess I probably have like, let's say I have 100 you know, since 2015, you know. So it's a thing that I will do for a bit and then take a break, do for a bit, take a break. And I've had success with it. And I've had like some great moments, you know, and some cool things. But I really started it in 2015 for two reasons. I wanted a way to kind of like, I started getting asked by other comics, like, how do you put together a tour? And how do you do these things, you know? And I was like, oh, like a podcast sounds like a good way to kind of like maybe talk about that. Maybe like outline like a 10-minute, like, here's how you put together a tour, you know, or something like that, right? And then when I started doing it, I quickly realized that you can interview other people and get to know these maybe people you know in the comedy world, but you don't never get to sit down with. And then I had the other thought of, oh, I could reach out to people that I wish I could talk to, and maybe they could tell me how to do the things that I want to do, right? Like in 2015, I thought I wanted to be a writer for Conan. I was like, I just want to write for Conan. I want to do stand up at night, and my day job will be writing for Conan. And then I started interviewing people that write for late night. And then I was like, oh, I don't think I want to do this. Like, I was like, this sounds very difficult and like a lot of time and a lot of like, you know, there's a lot more in it than I thought. But wow, like that, okay, that changed my mind. And then I've done that over the years of just like, I meet someone or I talk to someone and I go, man, that person is cool and probably has cool stories. Come on my podcast. So it wasn't always like consistent, but there's been years where I've done tons of episodes in the year. And then there's been years where I've done one episode the entire year, you know, and it just goes ups and downs. And I'm always trying to like keep it alive in different ways. But I tell myself that I don't have to do the podcast. And so if I'm not interested in the moment, I just take a break. And then when I have an idea or like a new way I want to do it, I just go back in and I start doing it. And then I have those interviews and stuff like that. And then, of course, you're getting all those new listens and you have such a backlog that people go, I mean, you probably know this. People listen to this episode and they go, man, this show's great. And so then they listen to 10 other episodes, you know? And so that's kind of like what's happened is like anytime I've had like success with it, it's like then they've listened to other ones or something like that. You know, and I've had some fun guests and some cool people, but it really was for me to learn different parts of comedy. And, you know, I've interviewed people that do crazy different stuff that I never done, you know, and, like, you know, models or actresses or someone that just produces or, you know, things like that, that are like, what makes you do that? And then I hope that I can relate this to comedy, and then maybe I'll interview someone that owns a business. And I'm like, how could I apply that to comedy? So then I'm like saying that on the podcast. So if you're a comic, you're listening and you're like, oh, I never thought about doing X, Y, or Z, or, you know, or their approach to Instagram or their approach to social media in general. So I've always used it as a tool to teach myself, and then hopefully others can learn from it.
I think that that's the key. And I say that because in my own podcast, I'm essentially doing this for me. And then other people, it seems like they like it. And that's great. But at the end of the day, it's like, I'm like right now, I'm loving having this conversation with you. I'm super into it. I'm like, yeah, that's amazing. And like the fringe benefit is, you know, some people are going to listen to it at some point and maybe it'll help them too. But like, yeah, there's something great about like going in and learning new things and just exploring what you're interested in. Again, you're the idea that you are so like forward thinking, so to find people where you're like, okay, I want to learn this. Let's find a person who does that and talk to them. Like that's so, your brain is so open to new experience. And like, I'm so glad that other people can learn from this. Like you keep laughing. Like I'm giving you these ridiculous compliments because you don't think this about yourself, but I'm telling you from like the details, you know, it's like the difference between, it's like that corporate show where you were like, this did not go well. And they were like, we love it. I'm like, listen, you are confident together. You have an unorthodox way of looking at the world. And that is very helpful. And like that, like all you're trying to do is learn new things in the, like the purest essence of it and then share it with other people. Like chef's kiss. Like, how great is that? Like, you know, you want to share with people. Like, even the idea that you mentioned 2 seconds ago where you were like, I wanted to write for late night. And then I talked to people who did and realized it wasn't for me. Two things about that. One, what an interesting thing to learn that the world that they describe, you're like, I don't want that to be my world. And the strength of who you are, that to believe that you have, that there's something else where you're like, I wanted to do this, but because now I've found out that the style of work and the, you know, schedule is just not my kind of thing. I know I'll find something else, so we'll move forward to that. Mm-hmm. There are people that are banging on the same drum every day of their lives until they die, even if it turned out that when they finally got what they were trying to get, it wasn't the thing that they actually really wanted. Like, yeah. It's just so amazing that you know that about yourself, that you, like, have the strength of who you are to, like, see that as you talk to someone and they tell you this and you're like, oh, I did want that, but now I don't want that. Like, well, there's got to be other things maybe you do want. And there's something great about that. For you, of all the things that you learned, of all the things that you talk to people about, what's one of the things that you've taken away and, you know, helped you shape the next thing that you worked on, whether it was immediately or maybe it was months or years later where you were like, that guy said this to me and now it changed the whole way. And I know that's a huge question and maybe tough to answer, but like, you know, just an interesting lesson from one of your episodes.
Yeah, that's a good question. And also I know for a fact, there's been many episodes and it's always the people you don't expect where it's like this weird aha moment where you're like, how did we end up on this topic? But I'm so happy we did because I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many, different perspectives you must have encountered for sure.
Yeah. I would definitely say, one that I think about, I've been thinking about probably because it's more recent, is I had this girl on and she does PR and I didn't know how PR worked. And then I now know how PR works of like I know marketing, I know like advertisement, I spent a lot of time in that world, but I've never been in the world of like, I have a client and they have a new sock that's coming out, so I need to get it on NBC. And then like contacting these people and how like, I didn't know that like news stations on their website, they're like looking for tips, you know? And so like, you could just be like, hey, I'm Zach and I'm coming through Seattle and I got a weird personality. Do you want to interview me? They would be like, yeah, maybe, you know, like just the, like that could happen. And then this whole time I've been emailing these bars and music venues and stuff. I could have been emailing NBC. I could have been emailing local radio in certain ways. You know, like I've definitely done that a couple of times where it's like a college radio or something that I heard I could get onto, but I've never been like, oh yeah, NBC, let me call CBS or, you know, like I've never even thought about any of that stuff and like getting it out on a bigger scale that way. I had Rick Roberts on my podcast and I've listened to, I think, every episode of his podcast since like 2015. And he's a comic, very talented, and his show just ended recently, but I had him on my show and it was like years of wanting to pick his brain. You know what I mean? Like years of like, I have so many questions. I'll try to be concise about this, but you know, like he was just like, you know, he's doing a lot of things that I want to do and he's approaching comedy. I'm approaching it from, I'm on the road trying to sell my own tickets. And then he approaches it from, I'm getting treated as really well by corporate gigs, you know, like he's getting flown places and getting in nice hotels. And me, I'm like, all right, I'm going to sleep on a couch and make $300. You know, like that's like, you know, we're approaching comedy from different. So just like his whole perspective and coming from someone that's been doing it, I think twice as long as I have, was just eye-opening in so many ways.
Oh, that's great. Great, too, that you got to talk to one of your heroes. Like somebody that you've really, you know, invested time in listening to their stuff and seeing what they're doing and enjoying what they've put out there. I bet he really appreciated that, you know, because comics, you get a lot of slack. People give you a hard time. You know, they're like, make me laugh, funny guy. And it's like, okay, I guess. Another reason why I'm sure he likes corporate events, they tend, not always, but they tend to be slightly more civilized. So, you know, it can be helpful. Rarely are people throwing beer bottles at you at a corporate event. Rarely. Yeah. Not never.
Rarely.
Just rarely, you know.
Yeah.
Man, exactly. It is fascinating, though, because it's a different kind of world altogether. That's just so great that you, like, learned so many different kinds of things that these people have inspired you to look at it. I also love the idea that, like, you interview people that are not necessarily even comedians, but, like, then twist it back into, like, a lesson for comedians. Like, it's like, okay, this is what I'm going to take from this. Really interesting. I also think it's really smart of you when you talk about the late night thing to acknowledge the idea of the like real world action of doing a job, right? Because I remember when I first was starting this podcast and was talking to people, the only thing everyone thought was you take an improv class, then you go on SNL. And so then I'd talk to people, the classic trajectory. You laugh, but there's a ton of people who think that that's true.
No, my family's told me to call Steve Martin. They're like, why don't you just call him and see if he needs someone to open for him?
Oh, that's good. His number's available. It's in the yellow pages. Absolutely. For sure. Give him a call. He's available. You just swing by Hulu, the Hulu offices, and see if he's hanging out there writing a new show. Yeah. But with SNL, I remember talking to some people who were like, I really want to do it. And I was like, what do you like about it? We're talking about that. And then I was like, how do you feel about that schedule? And they're like, what do you mean? I was like, it's a real late night schedule. You have to get on a late night situation. You don't start until midday and then you stay up until like 3 or 4 in the morning. And that's 7 days a week. Like you get a day off if you get a day off. And really, if you have a big deal guest coming in, you're probably prepping some writing on that day off you have. You're not going to be a slouch when you're writing for jokes for Scarlett Johansson, right? Like, it's not like the rest of us who are just writing sketches for our pals and you're like, Johnny, you'll say this, right? Like, no, it's got to go through not just Lorne, but also a famous person and then standards and practices. Like, there's so much to go through. The idea of that, the effort, I don't know how much it is right now, but in recent years, there was a lot of drugs too. So there's like, okay, how ready are you to be in that world? Like if you're a person who's not part of that or like maybe you're recovering from that, like it's not your crowd. You don't want to go there. That's not going to be good for you. And the idea of it is like, just to be realistic about like, okay, well, what do you want your life to be like? And I think that if you really value yourself and the way you exist in the world, like this is what I need. This is the kind of schedule. I'm a morning person or I'm this kind of person. I need this much to get my work done. Like you have to see that whatever job might not be the right thing. Late night too is a late schedule, like where you have to be up late all the time and doing lots of different kinds of stuff.
It sounds like it's just, it's not like a morning or night, it's just your whole life.
It's just like 24/7.
Like you might be at home, you're at home, but you might be like, I gotta get some jokes in for tomorrow. Yeah.
That's why when you apply for like a late night show, first you write a packet and then they give you like a timed packet where they're like, okay, in the next 1 day, you have to come up with 400 jokes. And you're like, I'm sorry, what? And they're like, bring them in tomorrow at 8. And you're like, what? oh, and if you don't have 400 jokes written, they're like, you can't do this. You're like,
yeah. What?
You're like, you don't have the stamina. We need constant, always, tons of ideas. Oh, man. Really interesting. I appreciate like examining things. And again, even to continually, you know, compliment you, the idea of you knowing who you are enough to know that's not the kind of schedule I'm looking for. This is, you know, I thought this is the style of thing that I wanted, but I would like something slightly different. And then make it your own way. Make it your own way the way you've been doing it the whole time. Everything that you've been doing has been, you know, exactly the right thing for you because it's your way. And even if the rest of the world is like, that doesn't make sense to me, you're like, well, it makes sense to me. And it turns out it's my life. So it's fine.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. So impressive. So impressive.
Thank you. Thank you.
You've put a lot of effort into your, you know, writing stuff, creating things, you're creating opportunities for yourself, but you have to have something that inspires you. What are you doing for you? What is the way in which you are personally creatively filling your own cup so that you have the energy and, you know, stamina to continue to work on your jokes and do tours and write things? What are the ways that you're developing your own creativity?
Yeah, I'm very like, as a lot of people with ADHD, they like projects and we like deep diving into things. And like during the pandemic, like I talked about, like I started repairing stuff and then I started watching this guy on YouTube called My Mate Vince. And if you don't really have to enjoy fixing things, but if you like a good story, you should watch it, because what pulled me in with this guy is, I think it was like, it might've been a Nintendo Switch or something. It was some kind of gaming thing. And the video was 3 hours long and the guy cut together maybe weeks. I'm not quite sure the time limit, but it would just be like hours and then like fast forward footage. And then it would cut to the next day. And then you're like, is he going to fix this? And you're like, you just got so, you're like, he's deep into it. Like he's got this apart and this, and he's like, he's burnt this thing up and you're like, can he do it? You know? And so I started watching that a lot. And now I've watched like everything the guys ever put out. And that did kind of inspire me to start making my own TikToks of like repairing stuff again. And, you know, I just really started getting into it. So I definitely say like me tinkering, and I have like a desk in my apartment that's just has my soldering iron and has my stuff that I need to take apart electronics. And it's just, that's my station. And I can do that while my girlfriend watches TV and I can see the TV. And so I can watch that with her and talk about it as I'm still like, maybe making a TikTok about it, or maybe I'm just tinkering for my own fun. So that's like what I like to do on a day to day. But then also my entire stand-up career has always been like the only way that I don't get so stressed out or overwhelmed is to have like goals and like things I'm working towards. Like I told you about that big tour. So then in 2019, that was all I thought about and talked about to people. It was like, yeah, 2019 is fine. But in 2020, I'm going on this tour and everything's about this tour and I'm working on this tour. So I have another project as of right now that I'm working on, but that is that. And, it's called The Big Laugh. And, on April 22nd, six of us are getting together and we're doing a comedy show and it's going to be filmed with very nice cameras. And then I'm editing it myself and then I'm submitting it to a distribution company that's going to hopefully get it onto some streaming services. And that's a whole process. So the distribution company said things are good with this streaming service and maybe these are optional. but I, at the same time, have to edit it and get it all to the tech specs that they want. So not only does the show have to go well and the comics have to do well, then the filming has to go well, and then the editing, and then submitting has to go well. So there's a lot of steps to it, but that's been like my project is the big laugh. And so it started with us talking about, man, it's hard to get good film, good footage. What if we just all pitched in on filming a night with multi-cameras, stuff like that? And then that led me to all my, you know, late night research that I do anyways. I went down a rabbit hole of how you can hire distribution companies if you have something already made. And I was like, okay, all right. And so then I'm scheduling meetings with them and being like, so how's that all that work? You know, and I'm just like trying to like get all that. So now I'm creating my own show, hopefully. So if it gets approved, it's going to have every comic, like there's going to be two comics in every episode, 15 minutes each, 30 minute episodes. And then there's going to be a handful of episodes in the first, what I call season. And then if that actually happens and all gets approved, I will literally turn around and do it again with more comics. And we all do 15 minute sets again and record another night and then release it as a second season on the streaming services. But I mean, that's all down the road. We just, April 22nd, we're filming it. So hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll be mid edit when the episode comes out. You'll be like, what? Yeah. I've been editing this for a while. I don't. Oh, yeah. Man, that, what a great, excellent goal, like way to put it together. I love the way you just find out information. Turns out, hey, anyone who's listening this far into it, turns out every bit of information is available. You just need to ask. This is what, yeah, I'm learning from Zach. True. It's available. You can learn how to do stuff. I'm like, I don't know how to do that. What do you mean? Turns out I could find out. I just need to ask some people and they will tell me. And the like power of that, the like, I feel so empowered. Like I didn't know you could just ask and they'd tell you. Like, this is amazing. Like, so great. Like, you're an impressive dude. You just know things and you like, you find out the information and you just put it all together in a way that like so many people are held back and so many people aren't doing stuff because they don't know how to do it. And you're like, I don't know how to do it. Let me just investigate forever. And then you like get a plan and your friends, thank God they're your friends. They're like, man, thank God this guy is organizing everything, you know? And you're like, guys, I just figured out how we can make our own special. Like, what? Oh my God. It's just so cool. I'm like so impressed with your whole journey and effort that you put in and the like, you know, you're just such a go-getter and are creating this world for yourself. And the beauty of it is like, no matter how it goes in, no matter how like the overall larger sense of like what comedy should be or how it develops culturally or whatever it might be, I know you're riding that wave. If all of a sudden there's a new app or like, oh, comedians don't do videos anymore, now they do this thing, you'll be like right on the crest of that wave. Like, yeah, I knew that. Hold on, let me teach you how to do that. Like, what? Like, that's so like impressive and great. And like, I hope that the people that are listening are like empowered by you to know that they can just find the information and make whatever they want to make, no matter what. It's just, I want people to be able to do things like you're doing. And it's like great to know that you're there actually doing it. I'm always like, people should be able to do this, right? It's true. Zach's doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, if you've made it this far into the episode, message me personally. What do you want to do? What project are you working on? I'll investigate something for you.
There you go.
I'll do the search. Let's figure it out.
He knows how to do it. He probably already has a podcast episode of his own that explains it. It'll be like, oh, let me just send that to you. Oh, yeah. Or you'll be like, oh, how do you run a network? I'll find a guy. Like...
I like adventures. Why not?
Yeah, you do. You have quite an adventurous life. Absolutely. You are such an adventurous dude.
Thank you. Have you ever heard the idea of brain wrinkles? I don't think it's true, but I like the idea of it.
Tell me about it. No.
The idea is that every time you have like a new experience, you get a wrinkle on your brain. So that's like a term I use, like my friends know it, my girlfriend knows it, everything, where I'm just like, I'm just trying to get that new brain wrinkle. Let's go do that weird, crazy thing. Cause I'm trying to get that new brain wrinkle.
Oh so. My God. I love it. I love it. Learning new things gives you a new brain wrinkle. I think that that's adorable. And I hope that that's true. And I hope when they remove your brain from your head after you die, it's like the most wrinkled thing.
They're just like, this
is insane. And then they keep it because it's so much knowledge in it. Can we extract the knowledge? No, but we can be aware that it's there.
Yeah, we can count the rings.
What if that's how brains do work? We're just like little trees.
Look at all these rings.
Oh, so many. My God. Zach, thank you so much for being on the podcast and telling your stories and just sharing with us the sheer power of just like asking questions and being curious. Like, thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I totally appreciate it. This was so much fun. And I will have anxiety for 2 weeks about what I said and worry about it. But I am happy to be here. And thank you. Thank you so much. Honestly, this was a lot of fun.
Good. Thank you for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all of our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.